This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Tuesday, November 26th. We ended yesterday by saying we would talk about the Don McGahn ruling once it came down, and it has. A federal court ruled that the president cannot just order people to ignore congressional subpoenas because he doesn't have, quote, the powers of a monarch. The judge said it that bluntly, powers of a monarch, no. But also, the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday stayed a congressional subpoena for President Trump's tax returns. Now, neither of these are Trump-Ukraine cases per se, but both could matter to the impeachment process. And we will talk about both of those courtroom developments with our special guest today, Neil Katyal, former U.S. Solicitor General, who has argued 39 cases before the Supreme Court himself. We will also touch on other impeachment news. Adam Schiff says he'll have a Trump-Ukraine report ready for the House Judiciary Committee shortly after Thanksgiving break. That seems to mean Schiff is fast-tracking the impeachment process, not waiting for court rulings that could force others to testify before him. But Politico reports that the House may hold at least one more public hearing on possible impeachable offenses from the Russia investigation. The trial of Roger Stone, which concluded with his conviction this month, seemed to suggest at least one instance of Trump lying under oath to Robert Mueller. Neil Katyal was an acting Solicitor General under President Obama. He currently leads one of the largest U.S. Supreme Court law practices. In fact, he holds the same position atop the same company that Chief Justice John Roberts used to hold when he was in private practice. Katyal personally argued before the High Court 39 times, as I said. He wrote the special counsel rules that guided the Mueller investigation. If you watch a lot of MSNBC, you've definitely seen Neil do legal analysis. He calls himself a nonpartisan extremist centrist. He angered Democrats when he supported Trump's nominee Neil Gorsuch for the Supreme Court. Katyal believes Gorsuch is a, quote, real judge, but Neil Katyal has written a book now called Impeach, the Case Against Donald Trump. Now, tomorrow, by the way, listeners, we will have Rich Lowry from National Review arguing why not to impeach, but today it's the case against Donald Trump. Neil, so happy to have you with us. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's a real delight to be here, and thanks for that very kind introduction.
Obviously, impeachment is a political process, not the same as a criminal trial. But if you were arguing the Trump-Ukraine case in court, would you have enough evidence yet showing Trump personally ordered the military aid withheld or that he did it to shake down Ukraine?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's overwhelming. And first of all, I'm not sure the legal standard or even the political standard would be that you had to order the shakedown. The very fact that he's seeking assistance from a foreign government is, I think, what does so much of the work.
But Republicans in the public hearings were trying to establish that the aid could be held up for a while after a new president like Zelensky was elected, and the White House first wanted to see if he was corrupt or if he would use this money from the American taxpayers legitimately. Can you prove beyond a reasonable doubt, could you, if this was a court case, that that was not the case?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a presidential decision to suspend aid and to hold up a White House meeting in search of a rationale. And indeed, yesterday's Washington Post confirms that by talking about the scramble that Mick Mulvaney had and others once the whistleblower report happened to try and post hoc justify what the president had done. The fact is, you know, the president has been asked, oh, okay, you say this is about corruption. Did you care about any other of the 194 countries on the earth than corruption? Did you ever say one thing direct to any government official ever in your 3 years as president? He hasn't been able to come up with another example. And then he says it's about corruption. And then the question is, well, okay, if it's about corruption in Ukraine, did you care about anything else besides the Bidens? Answer, no, there's no other thing. So this has all been targeted at one specific alleged instance of corruption. The other problem with the story is that the Trump administration had certified earlier in the summer that Ukraine wasn't a corrupt place and that aid could flow. So his own administration had reached a contrary conclusion. So, yeah, this is not a good argument. I'd love to test it out in any sort of court, or indeed even in the impeachment context, which is both kind of legal and political. It's a strange animal.
And what about the release of the aid? The Democrats' theory of the case is that once Trump knew the whistleblower complaint would be made public and his shakedown of Ukraine would be revealed, he quickly let the aid flow to cover himself. But no one really testified to the process or rationale given, you know, to the Pentagon to let it flow. Or did I miss it?
No, I don't think we know, because I think the White House has gagged all of that information. And so that's left with the Republicans making the following argument. The argument is, well, the aid ultimately flowed on September 11th, so therefore, no harm, no foul. And this is a very bad argument for two simple reasons. Number one, the timeline suggests the only reason the aid flowed is because of the whistleblower complaint. Congress got the whistleblower complaint on September 9th of this year, and then magically, after months of being withheld, all of a sudden on September 11th, 48 hours later, the aid happens to flow. Now, maybe that's just a real coincidence, but I strongly doubt it, and I suspect that there are records and receipts that will ultimately prove it.
And Zelensky was going to go on Fareed Zakaria's show on CNN and announce the Biden and 2016 investigations, but he canceled. So the charge is attempted extortion, I guess.
Yeah, you could call it extortion, you could call it bribery, you could call it abuse of power. There are a lot of different terms. But Brian, I'm really glad you brought that up, because, you know, I've had the privilege of serving in two different justice departments. And both times, you know, I've seen law enforcement investigations firsthand. And the one thing I can tell you is that if you're conducting a law enforcement investigation, the last thing you do is seek a public announcement of it. Why? Because that's when evidence dries up and witnesses start to scatter. And here, what the president was seeking was not to actually root out any corruption in Ukraine. He wanted an announcement as such. And Ambassador Sondland—
Can I jump in on that? Because what a great point. I just want to put brackets around that for the listeners, because I haven't heard this one before. If Trump really wanted an investigation of corruption, you're saying this is something that people who are really in that field, like in the Justice Department, scrupulously keep secret so they don't tip off the suspects.
Exactly. I go into this in the book in some detail to say, you know, this is the exact opposite of the way law enforcement investigations are done. And very interestingly, last week, Ambassador Sondland, who's Trump's own guy, this is Trump's ambassador to the EU, who he handpicked to run this Ukrainian operation, testified to the exact same thing. He said, for Trump, what was important was not the investigation, it was the announcement of the investigation. Because that's, of course, the thing that would, you know, tar and feather Vice President Biden.
Let me get your take on some of the impeachment news developments in the last day. The federal court ruling that former White House counsel Don McGahn is not immune from a congressional subpoena in the Russia investigation. What's the significance, if any, to Trump-Ukraine?
I think that there's a lot of significance in the ruling itself, both generally about our system and then about Ukraine. So what it's saying, and this is a real huge total loss for Donald Trump, what it's saying is that his White House, of course, former White House counsel, his top lawyer, McGahn, has to go and testify and provide evidence to Congress about whether President Trump lied in the Mueller investigation. And so, you know, the significance, number one, is it's a real thorough rebuke by a very learned judge to this Trump doctrine that because he's the president, he can do no wrong. What her whole opinion is about is that we have no kings in America and that no one is above the law. It's a rejection of this Trump manifesto in stark terms. And then specifically with respect to the Ukrainian impeachment investigation, she goes on to say, hey, this ruling's not just about McGahn, it's about any White House official, that the president can't just simply try and make them hide and not tell the truth to the American people. It, strictly speaking, doesn't control the case because, you know, people like Kupperman and John Bolton, who are two people who the Congress wants to hear from, aren't formally in the case. But the reasoning and logic of her opinion is all about those individuals.
But the appeals process and then bringing John Bolton and Mulvaney, et cetera, into it, not just people from the Russia investigation, might take too long to matter for this impeachment process. So one intriguing twist here is that while the Supreme Court may not rule on these subpoenas in time to compel Bolton or Mulvaney or Pompeo, we should mention him, or others to testify, an impeachment trial in the Senate would be presided over by Chief Justice Roberts, who you know. Here is Adam Schiff on CNN on Sunday seeing an opportunity to compel more testimony from that.
I think there's certainly merit to the idea that we may get a quicker ruling from a chief justice in a Senate trial, if it ever came to that, than we would get by going months and months on and litigating the matter. There's no guarantee of that, but I think that it's entirely possible.
So from your understanding of the law, from you knowing John Roberts professionally, do you think he would intervene in that way?
So if there's one thing I hope your listeners take from this, it's the idea that the American public have a right and a need to know this information as quickly as possible, and that this president is blocking all of it, all the emails, all the texts, all the witnesses of anyone in the executive branch. And that is a fundamentally un-American decision. And the question you're asking, Brian, is what's the best and fastest path for that information to come out? And I think the president should, first of all, you know, release this information. I mean, right now it looks like he is so afraid that he has something to hide that's so bad that he's got to take this unprecedented step of gagging everyone. And then if he doesn't do that, I think there are two routes available. One is to go to the courts through this appeals process that you mentioned, which, by the way, I'm not as doubtful as you are on the length of time it'll take. I think this could all be done in a matter of weeks. Indeed, in the Nixon tapes case, in which a very similar set of issues arose, the case went to, from the district court, I think it was on April 1st, and ultimately resolved quickly, skipped the Court of Appeals, went straight to the Supreme Court, and everything was resolved totally within a period of 3 months. So I think it's possible for the court system to do that. But as you say, there is this other option because the president says he wants to have the ability to confront his witnesses and have a real trial, which I think is maybe one of the few good decisions he's made here. And so there'll be a trial. And in that trial, the Democrats can call forth John Bolton, can call forth Pompeo, can call forth Mulvaney and have them testify. And that's another way to get the truth out as well. That's going to be, you know, later, it's going to be in January. And I think, you know, honestly, that the American people deserve this information now. It's, after all, our taxpayer dollars. And indeed, this aid was all our taxpayer dollar funded aid. And but the president was using it for his personal private ends.
But my question is, presuming that they continue to refuse to testify, refuse to answer a subpoena without being compelled to do so by a court, and if that court case has not been decided yet, would John Roberts, in your opinion, as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who is presiding over the Senate trial, order it? I think we have some history from Chief Justice Rehnquist during the Clinton impeachment that they take a different attitude toward this than they would in an actual court case, because they say this isn't an actual court case. This is a political process, and they're not going to intervene on rules of evidence, et cetera, as they normally would.
So I've had the privilege of, I think, arguing 39 cases before the Chief Justice. And I would say I've rarely met a fairer, more scrupulous, a more careful man than John Roberts. So I have confidence that he will ultimately do the right thing. I think he's going to be guided by, he himself clerked for Chief Justice Rehnquist. So this is an unusual circumstance, which you had a Chief Justice who served as a law clerk to a former justice who became Chief Justice. And there's a lot of, I think, well-deserved reverence among the Chief Justice for his boss. When William Rehnquist presided over the Clinton impeachment, he said at the end of it, "Well, I did nothing and I did it very well." And I do think that there will be an element to the Chief Justice's decision making that will be about that, at least on, you know, fundamental matters that I think he's going to want to let the process unfold. But if it comes to something like actually, you know, the presentation of evidence and who can testify and the like, you know, those are much more legal questions and a place in which he may feel more comfortable.
By the way, the McGahn ruling was relevant to the Russia investigation, not Trump-Ukraine. As we said, do you support the idea that the House should hold at least one impeachment hearing that flows from the findings in the Mueller report?
I do think a hearing is appropriate, but the one thing I don't want is to have anything held up because of, you know, more White House stonewalling and delays and the like, because the Ukraine investigation, as we now know from the facts, is an open and shut case for impeachment. This is not hard. There are complications about Mueller. It's a really long report and so on. This is really simple. The president tried to cheat to win the 2020 election. He didn't try and just cheat with anyone. He tried to cheat with a foreign government, and he got caught. And now his own administration officials are saying and corroborating all of this.
Shari in Chelsea, you're on WNYC with Neil Katyal, author of Impeach, The Case Against Donald Trump. Hello. Hi, Shari.
Yes. Hi. Good morning to both of you. If you remember, in July 2016, Trump asked the Russians on live TV to hack into U.S. servers, and I thought that that was treasonous at the time. I don't know if that currently can be considered impeachable, but that's another ask of his for foreign assistance.
And Shari, I'm going to leave it there for time, but there are, of course, so many instances of Trump doing these things right out in public. It started with Russia, if you're listening, .. Now we have, after this whole story came to light, he just goes on TV and says, yeah, Ukraine, I do want you to investigate the Bidens. And oh, by the way, China, I want you to, too.
So when I wrote the book, I really wanted to write it for people who are undecided, and even for Republicans who are people who voted for Trump in 2016. And you could have voted for Trump and said, well, when he did that, he was a private actor. He was a private citizen saying, Rush, are you listening? And so on. And maybe you're willing to give private citizens more pass. But when you have the sitting president of the United States flexing his powers as commander in chief to hold up aid, taxpayer, you know, paid for, congressionally appropriated aid, that's a really different thing. That's why, to me, this is such a, and what the book argues, is such a paradigmatic case for impeachment in a way even 2016 wasn't, and what he was seeking for in 2016 wasn't. And I think Brian makes a really good point. It might be one thing if after the president got caught with Ukraine, he said, yeah, you know what? I made a mistake, a really bad mistake. And I definitely won't, you know, try and seek foreign interference in elections. I won't try and cheat, all that stuff. But what did he do instead? He said, yeah, I'd do it again. China, if you're listening, can you help me out with the Bidens? So we know this is going to happen again. And this is why this Republican talking point, which is, oh, let's just wait till the 2020 election, I think has it so backwards. I mean, the president is accused of cheating in the 2020 election. So to wait for the election in which he's cheating is bizarre. It's kind of like if Brian and I are playing a game of Monopoly and he accuses me of cheating and I say, well, let's figure out whether I'm really cheating. Let's play a game of Monopoly. You know, you don't play the same game you're accused of cheating in order to resolve those accusations against you.
Neil, you're on the air with Neil Katyal, author of Impeach, The Case Against Donald Trump. Hi, Neil.
Okay, thank you, Brian. The issue that I am wondering about is even, let's say the likely scenario that the House does vote out articles of impeachment, then it goes to the Republican-controlled Senate. And I think, again, most people would agree that no matter what the articles of impeachment say, no matter how much evidence there is, such as you have been laying out, the Senate will absolve the president of impeachment and exonerate him, and he will continue to be president. And I am just wondering what this all says for the presumably the ultimate goal of removing him from office for all the high crimes and misdemeanors.
So I want to push back a little against your very well said question, because I think that we actually don't know yet what the outcome in the Senate will be. I mean, remember that this whole investigation just became, you know, just started about 2 months ago when Congress found out about the whistleblower report. And everything has been moving in a super fast way. And we're literally at chapter one in this set of proceedings. And, you know, we know from the Nixon impeachment that support, while looks strong, can crumble pretty quickly. And, you know, there, even as it went into impeachment, you know, majority Republicans and a majority folks in the Senate were firmly behind Nixon. But then all of a sudden it crumbled. And one of the things that I'm kind of sick and tired about is people underestimating the strength of the American people and indeed those in Congress, that I do think that at critical moments in our nation's history, be it 1776 or 1787, or 1863, or 1937, or race movements and marriage equality, there were a lot of naysayers who said it couldn't be done, and yet it was done because it was the right thing to do, it was the principled thing to do, it was the American thing to do. And I am confident that as people think about this set of behaviors by this president and see the evidence in black and white, it's not for dispute, that the president, the calls for the president's removal will grow.
Let me follow up on that this way. We've had Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, on our impeachment coverage before. He will be on again. He acknowledges the facts before our eyes. He's not a denier. He acknowledges that Trump did basically what you're saying he did. But Lowry opposes impeachment anyway. And one of his arguments is that if Democrats were only trying to get to the bottom of the Ukraine controversy and exact a political price in the form of exposure and damaging revelations, they would have a slam dunk, he wrote in the New York Post this week. Instead, they're trying to build a case for impeachment and removal, a very high bar requiring a national consensus to succeed. We certainly don't have that national consensus yet. Two more polls came out today showing that those 5 days of public hearings didn't really move the needle at all in one direction or another.
Boy, I mean, everyone's rushing and looking at the polls, and this is now the Republicans' argument. They're not trying to defend the president's conduct. They're saying, well, look at the polls 5 days later. I think that's a fundamentally wrong way of thinking about this. You know, as I say, we're very early into this. And if you looked, for example, if you wanted to look at the polls, you'd see impeachment going up, I think, about 10 percentage points from a few months ago. So I do think that things are changing in a direction that are very ominous for President Trump.
Did you expect more, though, after people, if they paid any attention, heard Gordon Sondland, heard Fiona Hill, heard Admiral Colonel Vindman, did you expect more change?
Well, look, we're only at the the analogy to the indictment phase of this criminal trial. The real fireworks are in the Senate when it's an actual trial. We're at the very preliminary stages. So I don't know yet how many Americans have focused in on all of this. And of course, there's still a lot of testimony that the White House has hidden. The president insists he's done nothing wrong and has even made some intimations that he wants to testify. I think he should testify. How can he hide from the American people if he's saying that, oh, let's wait until the 2020 election and so on? Well, if he wants to wait till the 2020 election, then I think he has an obligation to go to the Senate, go and testify and tell his story. And then let's see what the American people think after he's not hiding in the shadows.
So last thing, how would you draw articles of impeachment? Specifically, how broadly would you draw articles of impeachment? Would they just be focused on Trump-Ukraine? Would they include obstruction of justice in the Mueller investigation? Would they include incitement to violence, which the president has certainly engaged in? Would you include emoluments clause stuff? Would you include hush money, as he's named individual one in the case that has Michael Cohen in prison?
Anything else, Brian, you want to add to that?
We could add other things.
I mean, the president has given us a lot to work with. So I have a whole chapter in the book about this that lays out, in my mind, the three clear articles of impeachment. Article one is abuse of power and trying to go and get this information, try and get secret help from a foreign government. Article two is bribery, which is an enumerated offense in the Constitution as impeachable. It's one of two things that our founders specifically said, and that is the quid pro quo here that the president sought with Ukraine. And Article three is obstruction of justice. All of this hiding of evidence, of witnesses that we've been talking about, Brian, for the last half hour. Now, I think all of those three articles in their text should focus on Ukraine, but I do think the president has demonstrated a pattern of conduct just as Nixon had. And what the Nixon prosecutors did in an impeachment context was to say, we're going to focus on Watergate, but then as part of the supporting accusations within each article, enumerate things beyond Watergate. And I think the same thing is true here. So in obstruction of justice, this is a president, obviously, who's had a rich history of that. The Mueller investigation details 10 of those episodes. I don't think that's the main event. I think that's the gravy on the main event.
And you don't want the American people to be the ultimate jury. The election is so close.
Well, I want the Congress of the United States to be the jury when it comes to impeachment, and I do think the Congress should be informed by the wishes of the people.
Neil Katyal, former acting U.S. Solicitor General under President Obama, now the author of Impeach, the Case Against Donald Trump. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One more thing before we go. We're inviting you to write your own article of impeachment. Go to our website, impeachmentpodcast.org, and you'll see the instructions. Write one article of impeachment that you think would hold up against President Trump. Later, we'll invite Trump defenders to refute your arguments. But if you think you can write one article of impeachment against the president that should hold up, go to our website, impeachmentpodcast.org, and you'll see how to submit it. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.